Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Writing Cabin with Tara Benner. I'm fantasy author Tara Benner, and this is my cabin. We all need to escape into story from time to time. So come on in, sit down by the fire, pour yourself a nice hot cup of coffee, and let's talk books. Now, today, instead of our usual show, I have a very special treat for you. I am going to be reading the first chapter of Better Off Dead, Mountain Shadow Mysteries, Book 1. The book is now available for pre-order, and it will officially be available May 15th. So if you do pre-order, make sure you send an email to tarabenner@gmail.com with a screenshot or other proof of purchase showing me that you've pre-ordered the book, and I will enter you into the giveaway of my Book Lovers Bundle, which will have a signed copy of the paperback version of Better Off Dead and a couple paperbacks of some of my current favorite paranormal mysteries. So pre-order it and shoot me an email, tarabenner@gmail.com, and I will enter you into the giveaway. So without further ado, here is chapter one. As I stared at the rat's nest of cables hanging from the wall, I realized that I had been robbed. My brand new smart TV was gone, leaving only the empty mount. My tastefully decorated mid-century apartment looked like a war zone. Someone had knocked over my bird of paradise plant just inside the door and broken the white clay pot. Books and papers were strewn all over the living room floor, and one of my kitchen chairs had been upended. My little home office in the corner was in complete disarray. They'd taken my $1,500 desktop computer, as well as my laptop and iPad. Pens and highlighters were scattered all over my desk, along with the contents of my file sorter. Moving in a daze, I went into the bedroom and stared at my mattress resting crookedly on the box spring, throw pillows lying pell-mell on the floor. The closet doors were wide open, as if someone had been rifling through my things, and the dresser drawers had been emptied. I froze when I saw the jewelry box still sitting on my dresser. It didn't contain anything of value, just some inexpensive necklaces and rings that I wore on a regular basis. The family heirlooms were hidden in a shoebox under my bed, tucked between the Christmas decorations and a box of wool sweaters. I knelt down and reached for the familiar battered box and froze when my hand skimmed the void between my twin plastic totes. No. No, 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 no. Bending over, I pressed my temple all the way to the floor to confirm what I already knew. The box where I kept my most precious treasures were gone. Great-grandma's pearls, Gramps' silver watch, my dad's class ring, all of it was gone. I sat up and tried to breathe as a hard lump formed in my throat. What sort of thieves took a dusty old shoebox but left the antique black walnut jewelry box that had been sitting out in plain sight? The answer smacked me in the face almost immediately, but my brain kept searching for some other explanation. There was only one person who knew what I'd kept in that shoebox, and I really, really didn't want it to be him. My legs felt like jelly as I got to my feet and walked out into the living room. My heart was throbbing dully somewhere behind my collarbone as my gaze darted from the framed photo of the two of us resting crookedly on the end table to the cut-out picture of Todd's head that I pasted on a groom's body. The bobble-headed groom version of him dominated the center of my wedding dream board, along with a similar photo of me against a Hawaiian sunset. With shaky hands, I dug my phone out of my back pocket and dialed my fiancé. Blood pounded in my ears, and the call went straight to voicemail. "Don't panic," I told myself. "It doesn't mean anything." Never mind that the manager at our wedding venue had called to let me know that our second choice date was available if we put down a deposit. The deposit that Todd was supposed to have dropped off weeks ago. I'd given him my half as soon as we decided on the venue, and he'd said he'd swing by on his way home the next day. When Todd hadn't answered my call from work, I'd called the caterer, the bakery, the florist, and the DJ. None of them had received our deposits either. I'd been spiraling the entire ride back to my apartment, preparing to confront Todd when he got home, and then I found this. "It's not what you think," I told myself firmly. Todd couldn't have stolen the money. I knew I'd sound like a crazy bridezilla if I accused him, so I dialed the number for Southwest Airlines. I'd scribbled a confirmation number that Todd had given me in the corner of my wedding calendar, which was covered in a rainbow of sticky notes. Each color corresponded to a different aspect of the event, and I'd drawn a big pink heart around our dateiversary. Todd had been strapped for cash after putting down the deposit on our venue, so I'd given him my credit card to purchase the plane tickets for our honeymoon in Hawaii. My voice shook as I read off the confirmation number, hoping it was all a big misunderstanding. "We're sorry. We do not have a reservation that matches that number." "Damn it." I hung up on the automated robot and tried Todd's number again. This time, rather than his outgoing message, I got an automated reply. "The number you have dialed has been disconnected or is no longer in service." "No," I yelled, jabbing my finger at the screen to end the call and chucking my phone onto the couch. I stormed back into the bedroom, intent on throwing all his stuff onto the curb. But when I reached the dresser the two of us shared, I realized that the only drawers the thieves had bothered to empty had belonged to Todd. His clothes were gone, along with his laptop and charger. Half of the closet was also empty, and he'd taken one of my suitcases. I couldn't believe it. Everything he'd ever said to me, all the plans we'd made, all of that was a lie. He hadn't worked as a delivery driver. Apparently, his job was cunning gullible blondes out of their entire life savings and then ransacking their apartments for anything of value. Was his name even really Todd? The thought made me want to be sick. Just then, my phone buzzed from the living room, and I practically sprinted out of the bedroom to reach it in time. Part of me hoped that it was Todd calling to tell me that we'd been robbed and that there was a ring of wedding scammers fleecing unsuspecting young couples all over Chicago. "Hello?" I gasped. "Caroline?" My mother's voice rang through the phone, and my heart dropped to my knees. "Are you all right?" "Fine," I lied. "I just had to run to get the phone." "Well, you really should sign up for a spin class or something. You sound as though you're about to have a cardiac event." "What's up, Mom?" I asked. I wasn't in the mood. "Why are you upset?" "I'm not upset," I gritted, wishing I'd thought to check the caller ID. "I'm just dealing with some stuff right now." "Planning a wedding is always stressful, particularly when it's thrown together so hastily." Mom's voice ratcheted up to her judgmental octave on that last word, and I rolled my eyes so hard I thought I might pull a muscle. "Uh-huh." I couldn't bring myself to explain that the wedding was off, and that the guy I introduced her to was a fraud. I certainly couldn't tell her he'd used my credit card information to book his getaway flight and was probably halfway to Mexico by then. "Well, I'm afraid I have some bad news." My stomach did a nasty flop as my mind flew to the worst-case scenario. Had Todd somehow roped my mom into his scheme and ripped her off too? "Your great-aunt Lucille, you know, grand-sister? I know who Aunt Lucille is, Mom." "Yes, well, she passed away last night. The nursing home just called to notify me, since your father was her next of kin. I guess she got a bad case of pneumonia and was too weak to fight it off." "She died?" "Yes, poor thing." I sank down the edge of my ottoman, my chest constricting with a different sort of grief. It had been a few years since I'd seen Aunt Lucille, but I'd visited her plenty as a kid. She'd been an actress and a burlesque dancer in her day, the epitome of the lively, eccentric aunt. Lucille had never had any children of her own, so she doted on my dad. "I'm sorry, honey. I know you were fond of her." Mom heaved a dramatic sigh. Given my current level of misery, I appreciated the effort to sound sincere. She and Dad's side of the family had never been Hallmark movie material. "But with your father gone and she and your grandmother on the outs," Mom trailed off suggestively, "maybe Lucille remembered you in her will." Ah, there it was. "That's really tacky, Mom." "Don't bite my head off, Caroline. I was just stating the facts. I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news. I just thought you'd like to know." I pressed my lips together. Typical Mom. She always said what she was thinking, whether it was appropriate or not. It was this trait of hers that made Gran look as though she'd tasted something sour whenever the two of them were together. "When's the funeral?" I asked, feeling suddenly very tired. "You know I don't keep up with that side of the family. You'll have to call your Gran and ask. I've got to go, honey. I'm meeting the girls for drinks." "Bye, Mom." I was numb with sadness and rage as I hung up the phone and tossed it back onto the couch. I couldn't even absorb the fact that Aunt Lucille was gone. I was still reeling from Todd. My fiancé wasn't my fiancé. This had all been one elaborate hoax. For the last 6 months, he'd been faking interest in me so that I'd fall in love with him. And it had worked. That was the part that hurt the most. But if that were true, I couldn't have been the only girl he'd done this to. Certainly not the first. Todd had been the perfect boyfriend. Or at least he'd seemed perfect for me. He would have had to, I thought darkly. Everything would have had to go exactly according to plan, so that when he staged that romantic proposal at Garden of the Phoenix, I'd been so infatuated that I agreed to marry him after knowing him for such a short time. Wait. I looked down at my ring. The princess cut diamond in a simple white gold setting that I had been flaunting all over the office for weeks. If the engagement was a hoax, that meant I'd been showing off a fake diamond engagement ring. I groaned aloud with embarrassment. Soon I'd have to tell my friends and everyone I worked with. It would be all anyone was gossiping about for months. Suddenly my apartment felt much too small, and I had to grab hold of the low wall that divided my living room from my tiny kitchenette. A dull ringing had started in my ears, and I had the sudden feeling that I might pass out. Fumbling for the latch on the sliding glass door, I flung it wide open and stuck my head out into the muggy July heat. Cars and buses inched by four stories below, filling the air with the scent of exhaust. I could feel the humidity clinging to my skin and frizzing my hair, but the fresh air helped me think. How long had Todd been planning this? Had he sought me out to swindle? Had he targeted me on the dating app I downloaded like some Dateline stalker? How many other women had he proposed to? How many had he duped? Did he move from city to city working this scheme, or did he have multiple scams going at once? A swoop of nausea accompanied that thought, and I staggered onto the balcony and emptied the contents of my stomach. Thankfully, I'd been working nonstop on a new ad account at work, and I'd had what we in the biz call a 3-espresso lunch. Wiping my mouth, I staggered inside. My gaze swiveled back to my wedding dream board, back to Todd's jovial face swimming in the cloud of peonies. I'd thought he'd look so cute in that picture. Now all I could see was a liar. My body seemed to move without consulting my brain, and my legs carried me across the room. Possessed by a rage I didn't know I could feel, I gripped the edges of the foam board and ripped it off my wall. It took a little of the paint with it, but that was the least of my problems. Storming back onto the balcony, I howled into the void and chucked the whole thing over the railing. For a second, Todd's face and mine sort of drifted in the air, before sinking to the ground like a rock. As I watched it fall, I had a moment of panic that the foam board would land on a motorist windshield and cause some terrible accident. But then my dream board hit the pavement and cracked neatly in two. I watched with grim satisfaction as a semi rolled by, crushing Todd's stupid face under 24-inch wheels. That concludes chapter one of Better Off Dead, Mountain Shadow Mysteries, book one. Make sure you go pre-order your copy, and I will see you all next week.